hello and welcome to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM in Irvine. We are broadcasting from the University of California Irvine campus, and we're on the web at KUCI.org and iTunes College Radio. Today is Wednesday, June 26, 2013. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and it's my pleasure today to have back Agent Ted Weinstein. He's been on before, and I'm happy to have him back. There's so much more to talk about. He's based in San Francisco, and he works with a broad range of journalists, academics, and other authors of nonfiction for adults. Before founding his agency in 2001, he held senior positions at several major publishing companies. Also a widely published author, Ted has been a music critic for NPR's All Things Considered and the San Francisco Chronicle, and he's frequently quoted in media stories about book publishing. Let's bring him on. Hey, Ted. Hello.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
There you are. I'm so glad you could be back. I think for those listeners who perhaps haven't heard past shows with you here with me or with Marie, could you talk a little bit more about how you became an agent?
I was sort of bullied into it by a couple of other agents, actually. I like to joke that I'm a recovering writer. I learned my lesson a long time ago because I found that though my grammar is fine, I'm not the most graceful writer. And more importantly, I realized just how darn hard it is. So I moved to the other side, the business side of writing, and had been more sort of a groupie for real writers and had worked in a variety of different roles in publishing, both paper and internet. And then having taken about a year off to write a book that ended up not being very good, in the course of chatting with several agents about its prospects, several asked me, what are you going to do? You need to go back to work. And I sort of ran down my resume, having worked in business development and marketing and editing and a lot of other different publishing roles. And they looked at each other, winked, looked back at me and said, well, we've decided you're going to be an agent. And so I'm a big believer over time in letting other people who know you better collectively decide what you should do. And hung out a shingle what turned out to be 10 days before 9/11, but still managed to sell a couple, actually three books in the first 3 months, and never looked back.
Interesting. Yeah, I love that, letting other people decide what you should be doing. I think that sort of happened to me too, but glad to hear that's a good way to go.
And in fact, that's what I tell authors of all stripes, whether they're my clients or not. A really important resource, I mean, this is going to sound very Northern California and New Agey, but I really firmly believe it, is that you should have a committee. Call it a board of directors, call it a committee, call it what you want. But having a group of people that you turn to for, if not life advice, then certainly for professional advice, I think is essential. And for writers particularly, that is some combination of a writing group or writing partners, as well as folks that are savvy about publishing to help encourage and guide and help an author tune their career. You know, none of us should be doing it alone. None of us should be working in isolation. And having a good, thoughtful committee that you turn to for advice at appropriate intervals, I think, is essential.
So likewise, then talk about a bit how your agency then came to represent what you represent, which is all nonfiction.
That's right. Part of it was I had been in the music business before and discovered after a number of years that I was a little bit losing my love of music because it became a work exercise. I couldn't go to a show or listen to a new album without starting to write the review in my head. And I really didn't want that to happen to literature when I moved into the agenting side of publishing. So one level, because I'm not a fiction writer and probably don't have the talents to be a good fiction editor, I just thought this isn't something I should be doing, helping fiction writers do what they do. And then on a very selfish level, I thought, I just want to keep novels for fun. Mm-hmm. And so now my fun reading is fiction, and I don't feel like I have to take marginal notes or be constantly evaluating. So I ended up working just in nonfiction. And then it's going to sound a little bit crass, but the other reason is that in nonfiction, we sell a book based on a proposal rather than the full book itself. And a proposal for a nonfiction book is a lot like a business plan, the kinds of business plans I've done in various other aspects of my career previously. So that was a more natural fit, and I was more immediately able to help authors with that part of what they have
So I'm going to guess that there are two, well, probably three main ways that you find clients or that clients come to you. And one would be through the slush pile, through a query letter, just a letter that comes in from somebody you've never met. Another would be perhaps a referral. And perhaps a third would be someone you meet at a conference, some sort of writer's event. Is that so? And are there any other ways that clients come to you?
Well, actually, I would rejigger it. I think there are three sort of categories, but and I would combine the blind queries and the folks I meet at writers' conferences in the sense that these are folks who are approaching me. I have no prior relationship. I don't know a thing about them, but they have presented themselves in a really compelling way. Here's what I'm working on. Here's why I think you should be interested. And about a third of my clients come from writers' conferences and blind submissions and other sort of unsolicited contacts. Another third, as you say, come from referrals because good people just know good people. And in that, I would also include clients of mine who are doing their second or third or fourth book. And then a third category is one that a lot of authors may not realize is a big part of every agent's business, and that's us reaching out to somebody else. Mm-hmm. And I spend too much of my day surfing the web and contacting strangers, looking for interesting topics, interesting subjects of an article, or interesting authors of an article, and approaching them blind and saying, hey, that's really interesting what you're up to. Have you ever thought about writing a book? Usually a third of my projects have come that way. That's the more active side of the scouting that most agents engage in.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. You know, I think what we're going to do is I want to give you a call back because you're still kind of breaking up, and let's see if we can get a better connection going and continue our conversation in just a minute. Would that be okay?
Sounds great.
Okay. Don't go away. Okay, so all of you out there, I am going to call Ted back. I don't know if you are hearing what I'm hearing. In case you are, I want a better connection here so you can have a more fun time listening to him. He has so many great things to say. So please don't go anywhere. I'm going to put music back on. Be right back.
Heaven sends a song through its doors, just as if it seems to know I'm exclusively yours. Knowing this, I feel but one way. You will understand it too, in these words that I say. I'll close my eyes to everyone but you, and when I do, I'll see you standing there. Lock my heart to any other caress. I'll never say yes to a new love affair.
Okay, we are back, and we have literary agent Ted Weinstein on the air with us. Hey, Ted.
Very good.
All right. It's sounding good. I'm so happy we did that. Anyway, so you were talking about how clients come to you. Would you continue on that?
Sure. And again, how we go to clients.
Yes.
And that's something that is really important for authors to be thinking about. My client, Austin Kleon, has a brilliant best-selling book called Steal Like an Artist, and is working on his next book, which is all about showing your work. And the point in both of those is, where do you take your influences from, and then how do you show your influences out there in the world in ways that make you discoverable? that the notion of working alone in a garret and then delivering a fully finished work of art is a rare model for success. And much more is to be getting constant feedback on one's work and doing that in a public setting as well, whether it's submitting stories, doing short journalistic works, op-eds, public speaking, whatever it is, making yourself known to the world as an expert in your writing or on your topic. That is always going to be the best way for an agent to find you, as opposed to preparing the perfect packet and sending it in as a blind submission to a variety of people. Both can work, but the best way is, as in all aspects of human life, to have other people chasing you.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I would imagine that you've seen your share of sort of submissions that have come to you and have had the same sort of feeling that we all have when we get junk mail that says, you know, occupant, address, city, state, that it could be for you, the query letter could be for you, or it could be for anyone.
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that's important to think about, I'll give the positive first, that because the bulk of blind submissions to every agency are so far from being of quality, that the sense of competition for folks that are actually sending quality queries is not as enormous as it sounds. On a statistical basis, we all reject 98-99% of what comes in. But in the 2-3% that's actually quality, that means we're taking maybe, you know, 5-10% of that, 15% of that. And so the kooky queries, the ill-thought-out queries, don't really matter. They're a burden on us, but authors shouldn't even worry about the other folks who aren't querying well. But when you are querying well, it really is about starting, it's like the end of Casablanca. This is the start of a beautiful relationship. And authors should be thinking that this is the beginning of a very important professional relationship and should start off on the right foot by making quite clear, hey, you, Mr. or Ms. Agent, are somebody I think would be a good fit for my work. Here's why. Let me tell you about me. And would you be interested in starting a real conversation? So that kind of personal communication, I don't mean someone knocking on my door unbidden, but rather sending a letter that is clearly a personal letter for appropriate reasons, those always get read more carefully. Those always get better responses, whether or not we're interested.
Mm-hmm. How important do you think is it to meet in person before you sign?
Not at all. I have probably a third or more of my clients I've actually never met. Some I only met long after we started working together. And just recently I had quite a shocking incident where somebody rang the buzzer in my office building out of the blue and tried to invite himself up so he could pitch me his book. I have no idea how he got my street address, doesn't really matter, and more importantly is that was utterly unhelpful, mm-hmm. as our phone call.
Right.
That what we traffic in is words on paper or pixels on lovely computer screens, mm-hmm. and it's got to start with the writing. Now, the exception to that is if the premise for someone's book or the core opportunity is driven by their public persona. So whether it's a celebrity book or I have clients who have made their name in the public realm and are now writing to accompany what they've done in public, lectures or whatever else, sure, their public presentation matters. But in terms of my ability to get them a book deal and to work productively with them, the core of that relationship is the written word, and that's where I prefer that it start.
Mm. So then what sort of things should a writer be looking for in terms of, you know, you've queried an agent, you've written a query letter that gets the attention of an agent, or an agent has come looking for you because of something they saw of yours in publication somewhere. Beyond being flattered that someone's interested in you, because so many writers will jump at the first agent, of course, because you feel that nobody else is ever going to want you, kind of like another high school thing, you know, like, I can't break up. I got to go with this one. This one wants me. What do you look for? I mean, you know, they might have all the qualifications. They, you know, have sold books. Do you look for their ideas for what you should do? Do you find out what publishers they have contacts at? I mean, what sort of things are really important to know before you sign with somebody?
Well, I would say first it has to start with self-knowledge for the author about what it is that they are looking for. That some authors need a lot of editorial help, so they're going to want probably a more editorially oriented agent. Others really want a deal maker, and so they would want an agent for whom those are the greater strengths, because agenting is a very personal business. There is no professional credentialing for agenting, no professional requirement, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all come with different backgrounds and different skill sets. So first off, an author should know what is it exactly that they need and are looking for. Then based on that, assuming that they have identified the right pool of potential agents that fall into those categories, a lot of questions come into play. First is just, do you communicate well with this person? That, as I said earlier, this is an ongoing, trusting professional relationship. And I've had some folks I've met where I know they have a great book project, but we were just on different pages, either with how I would counsel them to change their project, or we just never got into the right conversational rhythm. And someone's got to have enough self-presence to say, hey, you know what? You're a great agent. I'm a great writer. This just doesn't seem to be the right fit. And that's a no harm, no foul. So a decent personal rapport. Certainly a trusting sense that this person is a legitimate and successful agent. Ways to check that include, the leading one is to look at the publisher's marketplace database of book deals and see how many deals that person has done in the author's categories. AAR membership is one, but not the only way to know if somebody's for real. Looking at their website, seeing the other authors that they represent. There are a lot of very straightforward ways to find out, hey, is somebody for real? Do they do good work? Do they represent their clients well? And then at that point, it gets into the nitty-gritty of the more detailed conversation. How should the project be refined, revised, modified before it's ready for publishers? What is the plan by which that agent would help you with that? And then take it out to publishers. Every aspect of that long conversation, hey, do we think we have a good working relationship that's starting here?
Mm-hmm. How important is AAR as far as being a member agent, do you think?
I have been a member. I am not a member now, mostly for policy reasons. The AAR was supporting some policy points regarding a lot of the changes in ebook publishing that I was uncomfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
I do think AAR is a wonderful organization. There's great agents that are not AAR members. There are AAR members that might not be great agents, but it is one of many aspects that an author should look at. I think probably the three leading ones that I recommend all the time are the publisher's marketplace listing of deals. It's always worth a one-month $25 membership for an author to go through that database to see who's representing works like theirs. The second is Jeff Herman's guide to agents and editors. Because he does really thoughtful interviews with each of the agents that are listed in that book. And then the third is AAR membership. Beyond that, looking at agencies' websites, reputations, talking to other authors. This is business, and there are lots of ways in any business to find out who's for real and who does good work.
Mm-hmm. In terms of book proposals, so you've taken on a client. It seems like it's going to go well, everything's in line, and now comes work on the book proposal. And as you said, some agents are more active in working on book proposals with authors and others aren't. How far along do you want a book proposal to be before you feel that a potential client is viable? I mean, do you want it to be perfect? Do you want it to have all the elements in place in terms of what a book proposal should look like? How much has to be there?
It's a pretty broad range, particularly for those projects that I'm helping to create or where I'm reaching out to somebody who wasn't thinking about doing a book yet. Those are literally starting from scratch. I have approached some journalists and said, hey, have you ever thought about doing a book on a certain topic? And then I'll send them some sample proposals and they'll get started literally from zero and develop a proposal over time. Other clients have a lot of pieces in place, but I say to them when we agree to work together, I think this needs a lot of work. These are the things I'd like to work on with you, and if they feel that that's accurate and right, then we work together. I've had some clients where I've worked as long as 8, 9, 10 months with them revising a proposal to save their shame and mine, I won't say exactly how many revisions we might have gone through, but it can be a very long process. At the other extreme are some folks who are so far along, have great proposals. I may have some suggestions for some modest revisions, but it's pretty close to ready to go. I have a client like that, Kelly McGonigal, mm-hmm. whose book is called The Willpower Instinct. And I actually met her at a conference for science writers at the Berkeley Journalism School. And a bunch of enormously talented science journalists were there. It's one of those conferences that every agent dreams of being invited to. So at the end, this woman walked up to me and started chatting, and she said, "I teach the most popular class at Stanford." And I smiled, "Sure, okay, if that's what you say." And she said she'd been approached by lots of agents to write a book, but she had the feeling that they all just wanted to do a quick deal, and that was it, and they weren't going to really be involved beyond that. And she had liked what I had said about my desire to be much more involved on a career basis with my clients. And she said, "You know, that's the kind of agent I'm looking for." I said, "Great, you know, I'd be happy to chat with you at greater length. I'll be on the Stanford campus in a couple of weeks. Be happy to get together." So we had a nice cup of tea together, and I sent her some sample proposals. And in part, I think, because she teaches willpower, in just a couple of weeks, she had produced a spectacularly professional, almost polished and ready-to-go book proposal. And at that point, it was really easy to say, "Great, I would love to work with you. Here are a few short revisions I think you should do." And we were ready to pitch that project almost immediately.
Hmm. You're listening to Writers on Writing. I am with San Francisco-based literary agent Ted Weinstein, and he has a website with resources for you, a list of books on book proposals, how to write them, and recordings that will help you along your way, and you can find those at twliterary.com. So in terms of a book proposal then, are there any elements of it that are more important than others? I mean, there's the comp sheet. How important is the comparison sheet to editors who are possibly going to buy the project?
Really, all the elements are important, and I counsel authors to think of it really as a business plan. I'm actually working with an author right now who had a really good draft proposal. We had a nice chat on the phone. I said, "I think you should nudge the project along these lines." She came back to me a few weeks later having done so, and I thought, "Yeah, this is good." So we agreed to work together, and now we're doing the finer-grained revisions. But what she said was the most helpful to her was to, when I pushed her to, it's a business book, think of it as a business plan as much for yourself as for anybody else. That let's assume for a moment that all publishing is really self-publishing. And if you were going to do your book on your own, this document should really lay out for yourself and your loved ones the full plan for the book before you devote what will be an enormous amount of time and resources. And then if that business plan makes sense to you, that's much more compelling to the publishers down the road that you might want to be working with instead of doing direct publishing. So all of the different elements do matter. Comparable titles, target audience, your marketing plan, all of those sort of business elements that go in a book proposal, I can't say any one is more important than any other. They're all vital. And then the substantive part of the book proposal, the other half, where you lay out your detailed table of contents and a good chunk of sample writing, that shows exactly what the book is going to be. Think of that almost like the beta test. And those two different sides of a book proposal are both utterly essential for oneself, then for agents, and ultimately for editors and their teams within a publisher to try to persuade everybody, hey, this is a great business prospect for all of us.
Interesting. We have so much more to talk about, and fortunately we have you back for the second half. So everyone out there, stay with us. We'll be right back with more Ted Weinstein. Don't go anywhere.
Come back, baby, please don't go. No, I love you, darling, hate to see you go. Come back, baby, let's talk it over. one more time. My heart's full of sorrow, mama aching tears. Be gone 24 hours, child, seem like a thousand years. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. Darling, one more better day. Let's talk it over before you go away. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time.
Attorney Mari Frank, host of Privacy Piracy, which airs every Monday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. right here on KUCI, 88.9 FM in Irvine, and KUCI.org on the net. If you use a computer at work, there's a good chance your email is being monitored. Increasingly, the E in email stands for eavesdropping. It's a growing trend for employers to tell if you're working or just plain goofing off. Privacy intrusion also includes keyboard use, internet surfing, monitoring your voicemail, hidden cameras, and concealed microphones. If you're concerned about your privacy and what else is happening in the information age, I'm Mari Frank, host, 8 to 9 a.m. every Monday morning on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine and KUCI.org on the net. Thanks.
Howdy, y'all.
Howdy.
Listen to Writers on Writing
every Wednesday morning
at 9 a.m.
with Miss Barbara
and Miss Murray.
Did we say it was Wednesday?
Wednesday.
At 9?
Wednesday.
In the morning?
Wednesday.
The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information on this or other KUCI programs, visit kuci.org or kucitalk.org.
And welcome back to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM, broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus, and on the web at KUCI.org and iTunes College Radio. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and we have been here with Ted Weinstein, who's a literary agent in San Francisco. Before we bring him back on, we have a Pen on Fire speaker series event coming up on July 18th. Novelist Chris Bojalian will be with us with his new book, The Light on the Ruins. So check it out, penonfire.com, speaker series. There are still tickets left, and it's the first time he'll be in Orange County with us, and I'm so looking forward to this. Anything more you'd like to know about the show, you can find on penonfire.com as well. Hey, Ted.
Hello there.
Hey. So, say an author has a book or a couple of books out and has parted ways with their agent and is coming to you for their second or third or whatever book. I would imagine you look at sales of previous books, and if so, what are you looking for? Are you looking for a certain number of sales on a previous book?
For better or worse, everybody judges folks based on their track record, which can be good or it can be bad. When authors end up with a first book that didn't do great, even if the next book is about something very different, sadly it shapes people's expectations for how the second book is going to do. And in a funny way, a lot of the crazy book deals we might read about for big money are for first-time authors because, and this is a well-studied psychological principle, when it's your own imagination that's involved, we all can say, oh, wow, yeah, this is going to be a blockbuster. Whereas the more facts we have, the harder it is to draw wildly different senses of optimism when previous rounds haven't been so great. So in terms of numbers, big publishers say they're looking for a first book to have sold in the, you know, 20,000 unit range. That's a number they drop. It varies wildly by genre. It doesn't really mean much of anything. But we're talking in the tens of thousands for a first book to be considered a success in general terms only. And that also pertains for self-published books. There are many authors who may not have had a book deal originally, but have put out their own book, had what they consider success, what others would consider success, and then will come to an agent and say, hey, what do you think? Is there an opportunity now to get this picked up by a major publisher? But you really need to have sold 5 or 10,000 or more copies of that self-published book for the project as a whole to be attractive to a major publisher. So, again, these are rough numbers. There are no hard and there are no hard numbers that match any of this. But that's, I hope, a decent sense of scale generally that'll help folks think about their own project.
Yeah, it sure does. So, of course, speaking of self-publishing, when self-published authors come to you for representation, aside from the numbers, I mean, what impresses you or discourages you about potential clients who've self-published previously?
Often my first question, really just conversational, is why did you direct publish? And I prefer the term direct publishing to self-publishing because self-publishing has a negative affect to it, whereas direct publishing at least feels to me like you're treating it like real publishing. The outlets that are out there, I'm sure we'll talk about in a few minutes, are wonderful, and I'm glad authors have the opportunity now to get their words out more directly if they want to. But they have to treat it like a real publishing project. So my first question is always, why did you direct publish? Sometimes it's just, I had this, I just wanted to put it out in the world, so I uploaded it to Amazon in 12 minutes, and that's fine. Other times it's, I thought I had a great base, and I didn't think I wanted to give up a big proportion of the revenue to a publisher. Other times it's, hey, I pitched a lot of people, they didn't see the potential. I went and did it on my own, and in fact have proved the potential. So there are a lot of different reasons why somebody might have direct published and is now coming to an agent. And that's helpful. One, to understand what the track record and the success of the project has been thus far, and also to get a sense for how that author's mind works about the business sides of publishing.
What about, what do you think about hybrid publishers that go from traditional publishing to direct publishing?
Meaning authors or publishing houses?
Yeah, no, authors that have been traditionally published, and then they go, you know what? I want more money for myself. I want, you know, more control. I'm gonna do this myself.
Sure, and that I think falls into two categories. The small category is the Joe Conrath type, who have had such enormous success with traditional publishing. At the same time have built an enormous direct relationship with their audience. They can go and do what they wish. You know, if Stephen King wants to self-publish, he can do whatever he wants. James Patterson, Joe Conrath, Barry Eisler, et cetera, et cetera. The other are folks who did a traditional deal and it didn't sell very well. And as we were talking about just a minute ago, might see that this next book opportunity isn't going to be as big simply because the previous track record wasn't great. And at that point, they can say, hey, I'm going to prove the publishers and the agents wrong. And that's great. And again, that's one of the wonderful things about the era we live in, that in the old days, an author didn't have that opportunity. Now they do.
When I saw you in New York a couple months ago, you were talking a bit about Atavist and Smashwords. And Atavist, I wonder if you could say a few words about their publishing model, which seems to be so totally new to most people.
I would actually add a few more into this conversation and then divide them into two categories.
All
of the direct publishing outlets are amazing, and those would include, this is not a canonical list, but the biggies are obviously Amazon, Kindle Direct, and CreateSpace for physical books, Smashwords, Barnes & Noble has their own Nook Publishing, there's Book Baby, These are all folks, iBooks obviously, these are all folks where offer a publishing opportunity for full-length books. There are some other new ones springing up, most notably Atavist and Byliner, that are operating more as a hybrid of a magazine and direct publishing. And they're actually exercising editorial functions, but they're publishing short to mid-length pieces, almost the extended magazine piece as a standalone. And that's a new opportunity that doesn't really exist in paper because there's not the distribution channels that make any sense economically. But with digital downloads, you can now publish something that's 5,000 words, 10,000 words in an economically smart way, and that's what Atavist and Byliner are doing. You can also, do the same as an author. A client of mine is Keith Devlin, the math guy on Saturday mornings on NPR. He's an enormously prolific and successful author. He's got, I think, 29 or 30 books under his belt over the years, teaches math at Stanford, and is just one of the great math popularizers of our generation. He had a book coming out, I guess about 2 years ago, called Man of Numbers, all about Fibonacci, the actual historical person who brought numerals from the Arabic world to the West 800 years ago. The book was published by Bloomsbury. They did a beautiful job. Foreign rights have been sold all over the world. In the editing of that book, however, there was an interesting section that just didn't make sense in the book editorially, and that was where Keith talked about the parallels between Fibonacci 800 years ago and Steve Jobs in our lifetimes, both of whom helped create personal computing revolutions. Because the book itself was more historical, this chapter we pulled out. In the old days, we would have sold that to Scientific American or Wired as a first serial, or rather as an article to complement the publishing of the book. But now, in this day and age, I was able to say to Keith, hey, what about publishing this as a digital short? And he said, that's a great idea, let's do that. So we published on Kindle and Smashwords and Barnes & Noble a standalone, I think it's 9 or 10,000 words, little book that works by itself but also complements the physical and digital full-length book that Bloomsbury published. So here we had an opportunity to see a single author doing, to some extent, a hybrid model, part on his own, part with a publisher, part at full length, part at short length, and none of this would have been possible before the digital publishing age.
Mm. That's really interesting, and what I'm also hearing is something I like very much about the way you do business, which is that it sounds like you have ideas for your clients that they probably they didn't think of, you know, and I would think that would be something else you would want in an agent. I don't know how you ask an agent about that in terms of when you're deciding whether to go with him or her, but I like that. I think that's a really important aspect, don't you?
Well, it's a lot of fun, I must say. And again, living in this era where there's that many more opportunities, we all should be thinking more broadly about an author's prospects. I've often said that basically every author should see him or herself as a multimedia empire. And they're trying to show the contents of their head in as many different places as possible. Some of it is going to come under the rubric of traditional and new digital publishing. Others of it may be performance, the speaking tour. Others of it may be merchandise. There are a lot of different ways authors can get their insights and their words and their spirit out there. One of the reasons I like working on a career basis with my clients rather than just doing a deal and saying, great, it was nice to have known you, is because some of these things spring up over time. For most authors, not all of this is worth pursuing. Keith is a remarkably unusual guy in the sense that he's so prolific and he has so many opportunities. But when those opportunities are there, we'd be foolish not to chase them and take advantage of them.
Mm. I am talking with Ted Weinstein. He is a literary agent in San Francisco, and you can find out more about him at
TWLiterary.com.
That's right, TWLiterary.com. Thank you. Are there better times than others to submit proposals to editors? I hear everything closes down in the summer and in December. Is that true?
It's funny, in a perverse way, it's this rolling sense of contrarianism that there are some years where I actually sell more deals in the summer and at Christmas time than throughout the rest of the year,
mm-hmm.
in part because some folks say, oh, I'm not going to pitch then. You know, that notion of a cycle is really not that important. I think the only timing that authors should be worried about is if their book has a particular news hook that's essential. So I'll give you a couple of quick examples. I have a client whose book is called The Interloper. He's a remarkable journalist and amateur historian who's writing about Lee Harvey Oswald's time living in the Soviet Union before he came back to the States and killed President Kennedy. We're coming up on the 50th anniversary of Kennedy's assassination. So Peter Sobotnik is the author's name. He knew full well 2.5, 3 years ago that that was the ultimate deadline for him to have his book done and sold and finished and ready for the world. So his book is going to be out in October from Basic Books because there's an enormous, I hate to say it because it's a tragedy, but there's an enormous news hook that the book is related to. Similarly, I had a client named Bob Welch who wrote a book called American Nightingale about the first U.S. nurse who was killed in the right after the Normandy invasion. And his book came out in time for publicity around the 60th anniversary of D-Day. You know, those are the sorts of external markers where knowing that as an author, communicating that to agents so that we can in turn know, hey, yes, there is enough of a runway here for us to get this book project going. We can communicate that to publishers, and they say, hey, great, there's not just a smart book here, but an extra news hook that'll help its prospects. One more example, just because I'm going to take the opportunity to tout another client's book,
sure.
Is my client Mark Cohen, who's got a book out called Overweight Sensation. Fun little pun, and it's all about Alan Sherman, who many listeners may remember as the guy who wrote Hello, Mada, Hello,
Father. Of course, of course.
Well, we're now coming up on the 50th anniversary of that classic satirical song.
Wow.
So the book came out, and he's been traveling all over the country, absolutely tireless, and just was on National Public Radio because, again, here we are at an anniversary of something tied to the book, so it just helps draw attention to it. But the micro question that you started with is an interesting one. What is the timing by which we should be pitching a book over the course of a year? Agents should worry about that. Authors shouldn't probably worry about that up front unless we say, hey, I'd love to get this proposal done by July 1st because I think there's some folks and their publishing schedule is important, et cetera, et cetera. But by and large, those are the kinds of industry issues that authors should really not be worried about. They should be focused on their writing.
And on the author side of that would be if you know of something happening down the line, an anniversary coming up, I don't know, a year or two down the line. I guess it would have to be more if you haven't even started work yet. But you know, something that interests you, then, you know, putting a book proposal together way in advance of that anniversary or that event.
Oh, absolutely. The runway for books is long for lots of good reasons. It's easy to fetch and say, oh, it's ridiculous the amount of time things take. With digital, you can have it out tomorrow. Yes, you could theoretically have an e-book out tomorrow. When I published Keith Devlin's short e-book called Leonardo and Steve that I was talking about a few minutes ago, I literally did that in an hour from my laptop. But that's about the medium. That's not about good editing, good cover design, getting a publicity plan in place. You know, there are lots of things that go from first words typed on a computer screen all the way to finished books in readers' hands. And so you need to make sure there is enough time for all of those good, smart stages to be accomplished well.
In terms of publicity, you might have mentioned the other P word, the word platform, but I suppose we need to talk about that for a few minutes. When an author is coming to you for a...
You have $3.68 remaining on your card.
Okay.
Please enter the telephone number you wish to dial or your...
Okay, I don't know what that is, but I think we have to ignore that. When somebody's coming to you about for representation, what sort of thing are you looking for in terms of...
Please enter the telephone number you wish to dial.
Well, I don't know what is happening with our phone again, so I don't know if we're going to be able to continue this, and we are almost at the end anyway. I should thank you right now.
Please enter the telephone number you wish to
dial. I don't know if Ted is even still there. But let me... Are you there, Ted? Yeah, we've lost him, and I don't know what's going on with the phones here. I aim to find out, but that was Ted Weinstein. His literary agency is in San Francisco, and I'll continue this somehow, whether it be on my blog, whether we get him down here to do a speaker series event, whether I do another story on him for the ASJ Monthly, which would be great to extend this conversation. The ASJ Monthly, he's been in it before. It's been a few years, so there's a lot of new stuff to talk about. But if you want to look up that interview, go to theasjmonthly.org and enter in his name, Ted Weinstein, and you'll find the interview. And if you have trouble with that, write to me at penonfire@earthlink.net, and I'll connect you with it. I'll give you the link. In any case, you have been listening to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM in Irvine. Thank you so much for being with us, and come back next week. Curtis Sittenfeld, the novelist, will be here, and for the entire hour, I believe. So, have a great week. Stay in the chair. Get some good work done.